It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 29th, 2016. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Mount Pulaski's Heart, Soul. A walk into the courtroom feels like a step back in time, specifically a time when Abraham Lincoln was a small-town lawyer working copyright and murder trials. With its lawyers' tables and simple jury box, the Mount Pulaski Courthouse has made strides to highlight its importance to Lincoln's history. But over the past few years, a renewed effort has been made to reestablish the courthouse as the heart and soul of the city. The idea dates back to 2011, as the city celebrated its 175th anniversary with a series of events. As nearly 1,200 people from 35 states and 4 countries came back to the city to celebrate the anniversary, Tom Martin and others wanted to keep the feeling of civic pride alive. And one of the biggest ways to do that was to look at the building that has come to represent the area. The courthouse has been here for generations, so all these families living here feel like it's part of who they are, said Martin, who is the chairman of the Mount Pulaski Courthouse Foundation. It has a special place in a lot of people's hearts, whether they still live here or live in other parts of the world. The courthouse was built in 1848 and served as the Logan County seat of government until 1855, when it was moved to nearby Lincoln. The building would spend the next century as city hall, school, and post office. By 1935, the building was purchased by the state, and work began to restore it to its original 1850s appearance. The courthouse was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1978. Its most famous patron was Lincoln, who argued an unknown number of cases in the second-floor courtroom and helped establish his reputation as a gifted lawyer and orator. While the facility has been operated by the state for decades, that situation comes with both pros and cons. Whenever something is needed to be fixed or updated at the courthouse, it would require state funds, which could take months, if not years, to be appropriated. For Martin, it became time to take matters into the city's own hands. I and a whole lot of other people in the community got tired of saying, "Call your local lawmaker for help," Martin said. We said, "Let's stop looking to Springfield for help. Let's look within. Our ancestors built this with their own hands. It's ultimately our responsibility to take care of the heart and soul of the community." Since 2011, the foundation has raised nearly $400,000 through a combination of school fundraisers and private donations. Of those funds, $50,000 has been spent on smaller maintenance projects such as new doors, windows, and stairs around the courthouse. Those projects were just the tip of the iceberg, though, as the foundation now has its sights set on replacing the roof, which has not been updated since 1936. The state has committed to the purchase and construction, but a nearly year-long budget impasse with no end in sight has pushed the foundation to begin the expected $200,000 project themselves. The bids were sent out in early March, and Martin said he hopes the construction can begin by late spring, with work expected to be wrapped up in 6 months. "The community is ready to see us spend some of that money and get something big accomplished," Martin said. "So from our organization's standpoint and community standpoint, we're ready to get this going. If the state does not pass a budget with money for the project, the state would take over the project and cover the costs that have not yet been paid. The foundation would not be reimbursed for whatever they pay before the budget is passed." Construction projects are not the lone focus through restoring the courthouse, as numerous events were held last year to commemorate Lincoln on the 150th anniversary of his assassination. Street fairs and festivals were held in the courthouse and across the square lawn that surrounds it, and people were invited to celebrate holidays such as the 4th of July and Halloween. Barbara Stroud Borth, site manager of the courthouse, said those additions alone have made the facility more accommodating and have brought new life to the courthouse. We had more people coming in and felt it more part of the community, she said. The impact of the events can be seen in the attendance trend. The average turnout at Historical Preservation Agency sites dropped by nearly 9% from 2014 to 2015, according to the agency. During that same period, the Mount Pulaski Courthouse saw an 88% increase from 1,701 attendees to 3,207 attendees. The legacy of the courthouse to the village can be felt by those such as Bob McHugh, a retired sheet metal worker who has volunteered there since 2003. The building means so much to him and his family that his granddaughter had her wedding in the upstairs courtroom. She was thrilled to death to stand right on the spot where Lincoln stood, McHugh said. For now, though, Martin said they are focused on the roof project and continuing the efforts to add extra shine to the city's historical trophy. One of the goals was to increase attendance and bring Mount Pulaski back on the map, and we feel like we've really done that, he said. Man says nay to missing court date, arrives on horseback. After missing a series of previously scheduled court appearances in Decatur, a normal man came up with an old-fashioned way to make sure he was there Thursday for his latest one. Ronald Blaylock II rode horseback from Leroy to arrive with plenty of time to spare for a morning hearing at the Macon County Courts facility. The horse waited on the lawn outside while Blaylock, 38, went inside for a bond hearing stemming from charges of driving on a suspended driver's license. Blaylock didn't think he would receive a welcome reception in Decatur with the horse, which is named Rooster, based on a character in a John Wayne movie. However, Blaylock said everyone he encountered, from security officers to the judge and assistant state's attorney, were friendly. I thought I'd be in trouble, Blaylock said. Now I know they won't be so hard if you show up. With family living out of state and friends from the area at work, Blaylock didn't have anyone who would drive him to Decatur. Blaylock, who has worked as a truck driver, has been without his driver's license for nearly 4 months, he said. So he decided to make the trip from a farm near Leroy with Rooster, who has only one good eye, which Blaylock said raises his other senses, such as hearing. They set out about 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, arriving in Forsyth about 9:45 p.m. for a stop at McDonald's and to rest overnight. While there, Blaylock ate a quarter-pounder, and Rooster enjoyed munching on the lawn along with some sliced apples from the restaurant. The journey didn't go entirely smoothly, as the pair encountered heavy rain and lightning. Blaylock brought a sack with supplies to protect them from the elements, but he still got wet while pitching a tarp. The Tennessee walking horse didn't seem to mind, though, as Blaylock and Rooster lay on the ground, tired from the long walk. Making it through the night and remaining determined to resolve his legal matters, Blaylock left Forsyth about 6 a.m. Thursday and walked alongside the horse through town, thinking he needed to be at the courthouse by 8:30 a.m. He found he was early, as the hearing wasn't supposed to happen until 10 a.m., but it was able to proceed ahead of schedule. Meanwhile, Rooster was drawing attention while tied to a tree on the lawn outside and enjoying a shady spot to eat some of the grass and weeds. Curious courthouse staff and visitors entering the building took photos, with some starting to catch attention on Facebook. Michael Tarkzan, an investigator with the Macon County Public Defender's Office, watched from his office window, waiting for Blaylock to return outside. Tarkzan told him that the innovative approach to appearing for a court date should be an inspiration to others. It can be a lesson, Tarkzan said. Some guys can't seem to make it, and they live two blocks away. Blaylock decided to do what was necessary as he tries to get his driver's license back. He still needs to take care of issues in McLean County before he will be able to do so, but he was relieved to have the matter resolved in Macon County. Blaylock was ordered to pay a fine plus court costs as the case was closed. Blaylock didn't mind spending the time with Rooster, who he's been riding for 3 years. "I trust my horse," Blaylock said. "He's a good old horse. This is like a big dog, my friend." The pair planned to return to Leroy by today, likely spending another night camping out. Blaylock looked up at the clearing sky, hopeful that the weather would be better for the return trip. Legislators ask Clinton Plant for help. Officials meet to brainstorm future of Clinton Power Plant. Shut down of the Clinton Power Plant would have effects well beyond DeWitt County in central Illinois, said officials who met Thursday to discuss efforts to keep the plant open. There are nearly 700 jobs at the Clinton Power Station, and the median salary is about $90,000, and those are good jobs and jobs that can't be replaced, said State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth, at a news conference at the DeWitt County Government Building in Clinton. Mitchell said he's sponsoring legislation that would classify nuclear power as a renewable, low-carbon energy source. Illinois Electric Utilities would be required to purchase a specified percentage of low-cost carbon energy credits from energy sources that emit little or no carbon dioxide. Exelon officials have said that the legislation could help the plant, which has posted losses of $453 million in the past 6 years, remain competitive and stave off closing before its operating license expires in 2026. Mitchell said studies have shown that about 1,900 jobs directly or indirectly related to the plant could be lost. It also would be a blow to the Illinois power grid that draws about 50% of its power from nuclear plants, he added. "We want to keep the jobs and the property tax revenue the plant brings in, but if you take this plant off the grid, the price of energy for everyone in Illinois will go up," he said. Exelon is committed to keeping the plant, which is 6 miles east of Clinton, open through May 2017. But officials have said early retirement of the plant is likely if new legislation is not passed. The closure of the plant would increase electrical rates for every Illinois resident and serve to only hasten Illinois job losses everywhere as businesses lose the one competitive edge that Illinois still has, which is low energy costs, said State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, who also spoke at the news conference. "With the closure of nuclear plants, you would have unlimited upside to rate increases." Rose and Mitchell asked the 40 people in attendance, including officials from Clinton, DeWitt County, and other affected taxing bodies, and Exelon employees, to get the word out about the impact closure of the plant would have. Many of the environmental community are starting to realize that without nuke, carbon emissions actually increase in the market's share through natural gas, Rose said. "We are starting to gain some allies in places we didn't have allies before." But this closure would affect all residents in Illinois. DeWitt County gets about $2 million in property tax revenue each year from the plant, said DeWitt County Board Chairman Dave Newberg. "Taxing bodies would have to cut jobs and programs to raise property taxes to make up for the loss," he said. Also in attendance was Bloomington resident Caroline Joseph, who is in her 9th year at the plant as an operations manager. "I have 3 kids and we uprooted to move here, but it impacts me as an employee and member of the community to have to go through this every year where there are concerns about the plant shutting down," she said. "We are working and living year to year, which is difficult to make long-term family decisions. I'm in the nuclear business, so if this shuts down, there are no options for me here." Attorney General urges sex crime time limit abolition. Springfield. After former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert was sentenced Wednesday to 15 months in federal prison for violating banking laws in an attempt to cover up decades-old sexual abuse allegations, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan called on lawmakers to eliminate the statute of limitations on felony sex crimes against children. But legal defense experts say doing away with restrictions on how long after an alleged crime someone can be charged with could undermine the fairness of the legal process and put innocent people at risk of prosecution. It is very, very dangerous, said William Schroeder, a criminal law professor at Southern Illinois University. There are reasons for the statute of limitations. Chief among these reasons is the memories of both alleged victims and alleged perpetrators become less reliable over time, Schroeder said. Under current law, there is no statute of limitations on felony sex crimes against children when there's physical evidence or when someone required by law to report abuse fails to do so. In other felony cases, someone can be charged up to 20 years after the alleged victim turns 18. Authorities can't charge Hastert, a 74-year-old Republican, with sex crimes because the allegations against him dated back to his time as a high school teacher and wrestling coach in Yorkville, which ended in 1981. But in handing down his sentence, U.S. District Judge Thomas Durkin, the brother of Illinois Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Republican of Western Springs, referred to Hastert as a serial child molester. One of Hastert's alleged victims was allowed to testify at the sentencing, as was the sister of another alleged victim who has since died. Scott Cross, the 53-year-old brother of former Illinois House Republican leader Tom Cross, told the court that Hastert sexually abused him in a school locker room. Authorities say that there were at least three other victims, including one whom Hastert agreed to pay $3.5 million to keep quiet. It was banking violations related to those payments that led to the former speaker's downfall. While a written statement Madigan issued Wednesday afternoon didn't mention Hastert by name, it was released within hours after the sentencing. When a prosecutor cannot indict an offender for these heinous acts because the statute of limitations has run, it raises serious moral, legal, and ethical questions, said Madigan, a Democrat. We have long supported extending the time period for prosecutors to file sexual assault and abuse charges, and we urge the legislature to eliminate the statute of limitations on all sex crimes involving children. Polly Poskin, executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault, joined Madigan in the effort. If people understood the devastating and debilitating impact that sex crimes have on someone, then they would understand why it's so hard to step forward, especially when the perpetrator is someone in a position of trust, like a teacher or coach, Poskin said in a prepared statement. These victims need justice in order to heal, even decades after the abuse. But Schroeder said doing away with a statute of limitation would be profoundly misguided and would create too many problems. You have to have some kind of rational balance between society's interest in prosecuting malefactors and people's interest in one not being convicted of crimes they didn't commit, but in being able to move on, he said. The Office of the State Appellate Defender doesn't have an official position on Madigan's proposal, said Dave Bergschneider, Deputy State Appellate Defender, but the idea does raise concerns, he said. The purpose of the statute of limitations is to protect innocent people because the difficulty of presenting a defense, Bergschneider said. Most people could understand if they were charged with committing a crime on a certain day 30 years ago. It would probably be difficult for them to even begin to figure out where they were or what they were doing on that particular day, he said. In local news, Workers' Memorial Day ceremony honors lives, stresses safety. Decatur. Ronald Norman liked rooting for Chicago area sports team and going out dancing with his fiancée. A member of the Illinois Army National Guard, the 21-year-old had worked at Menards for about 5 months when he was crushed to death by falling lumber. 16 years later, Bob Norman thinks about his son every day, but it's hard to speculate about what he would have become. He was just getting his life started, Norman said. Ronald Norman's name was among those read during the Workers' Memorial Day ceremony Thursday, the event in front of the memorial monument at the Macon County Courts facility honoring those killed on the job, and stresses the importance of workplace safety. Every time a loved one is lost due to an industrial accident, most of the time it can be prevented, said Lloyd Holman, who led the ceremony. A lot of times it's just somebody pushing them along, trying to get something done. Let's get it done a little faster and not taking the safe course. 19 names were added to the monument this year, but only one of the deaths was recent. Robert Doty was killed on his way back to work in July when another car crossed the median and collided with his pickup truck. Doty was hauling an 80-gallon tank of diesel fuel, which ignited. Aaron Doty, 25, described his father as a Chicago Bears fan and avid fisherman. He remembers their last conversation as positive and encouraged others not to take moments with their loved ones for granted. Honestly, you can never know when the last time you're going to talk to people you do love. Make sure you always end on a good note, or if you think it's been too long since you've talked to that loved one, reach out to them and talk to them, Doty said. You never know what can happen. Macon County Coroner Michael Day said that he encountered many workplace-related deaths during his 22 years in the position. Some were likely preventable, he said. Day said that the annual event could help grieving families by showing that their loved ones are not forgotten. I know sometimes we lose sight in this world, he said. People are always looking at those that are very prominent, and people feel like all the attention goes to those people who have fame and renown. Here we have someone who went to work, who was the most important person in that family to everybody that loved them, and they didn't come home. Day complimented Holman after the ceremony about how the event had gone. The best one, Holman said, is when you don't have any new names to read. Child First unveils new name, home. Decatur. It's hard getting used to a new name. So much so that Kate Kurtz, the assistant Macon County State's attorney in charge of prosecuting sex crimes, came close to saying Macon County Child Advocacy Center during her remarks at the grand reopening Thursday afternoon of the Child First Center in its new home at 800 East Clay Street. The 3,542-square-foot space, the former home of administrative offices for Dove, Inc., has a new name to better reflect its service area, which expanded to include Piatt County in 2006, and its mission to provide children who've been abused a safe place to be interviewed about what happened to them. Executive Director Jean Moore also said that the Child First name should also eliminate confusion between the center and other community programs with advocate or advocacy in their names. We're very fortunate to have Youth Advocate, the Family Advocacy Center, and court-appointed special advocates, and proud to be in their company, but it does get confusing sometimes, Moore said. The Child First Center is not just a place, but the way we operate as a team. She described how law enforcement, health care providers, and state's attorney offices cooperate with the center to do what's best for each child served. More than 3,600 children alleged to have been sexual victims or physical abuse have been served since the center opened in 1999. Moore said the move in November to 800 East Clay Street from a similar-sized building in the 1900 block of North Water Street has reduced the center's rent and utility costs by more than half and has helped the center survive during the state budget crisis. Kurtz may have stumbled over the new name, but Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said that she makes a few missteps in court and has maintained a 100% jury trial conviction rate. Kurtz is also chairwoman of the Friends of the Child First Center and is working to build a more active group of volunteers and supporters. Scott also praised the work of the center's Allison Elsie, forensic interviewer and Piatt County advocate, and Amanda Havener, case coordinator and Macon County advocate. Decatur Deputy Police Chief Cody Moore and Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Tony Brown said by helping children and helping prosecutors build cases against perpetrators who commit crimes against them, the Child First Center makes the community a better place to live. For more information, call 217-422-6294. That's 422-6294. Juvenile record deletion reform urged by panel. Springfield. High costs and broad sharing of juvenile records are hurting chances of young people who committed minor offenses from taking those incidents off their record. The Illinois Juvenile Justice Commission released a study Thursday citing record elimination fees that run as high as $320 per arrest. The panel names strict eligibility rules among the roadblocks for youth seeking to remove their records, which can prevent them from getting employment, education, and housing. No Illinois agency has a comprehensive log of the number of juvenile records that have been erased each year, but the commission found that 87% of Illinois counties reported less than one juvenile record sweep annually from 2004 to 2014. The commission reported an average of 3 in 1,000 juvenile records were expunged during those 10 years. Tracking how many records were blocked out for all 102 counties would be too challenging, said Ashley Richardson, director of the Illinois Expungement Unit in the Office of the State Appellate Defender. Commission recommendations include clarifying language on juvenile record sealing, adding a penalty to existing policies for sharing juvenile records with unauthorized people, expanding the state's automatic expungement policy, and eliminating costly fees. Juvenile records are ineligible for hiding previous offenses in cases of murder and sex offenses if the youth is convicted of an offense after turning 18. No one younger than 18 can apply for juvenile expungement, but a house plan now in the Senate for consideration would allow someone younger than 18 to petition a court to erase their record for certain offenses. Destruction of a person's criminal and court records still allows for law enforcement, corrections facilities, and the military to see criminal histories. However, commission members say they discovered instances where records were shared with the public, schools, and landlords. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 29th, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.